6. When we get to the table, May isn't there, but Julie is. She gives us a big smile. Surprise! I'm early! She looks about the same as she did this morning, except I can spy the dark gap where her tooth used to be.
Don't start being early, Molly says.
I thought I could rely on you to always be later than me. Sorry for letting you down, Julie says. Sit! The look on May's face when she sees we're all here and she's late.
I don't know. She's never been late before.
She might be dead, Molly says. You all thought I was dead, and here I am, Julie says, winking.
You're making jokes now, Molly asks.
I'm pursuing a career in stand-up, didn't I tell you? Molly opens her mouth to say something, then changes her mind and closes it. I've never seen her stumped before. Julie's perky. She's in a good mood. Maybe the tooth was holding her back.
How are you feeling? Molly asks. How's your tooth?
Emancipated.
Are you going to go to the dentist?
Yeah, I called Tristan. He'll make an appointment for me when I get back.
Molly's not so subtle. She's confused. I'm not. Julie's lying. I was on the phone with Tristan. He would have mentioned if they had talked before I called. He would have mentioned the tooth. There's no way they talked after. He would have called me back. Texted.
What? Julie asks, catching on. Nothing, Molly says. Sorry, teeth stuff freaks me out.
Didn't mean to traumatize you.
Should I have my therapist bill you directly, or?
May comes in. She's not surprised to see us all here. She's not anything but tired. She rubs her eyes.
Hey, guys, she says, sitting next to me.
You okay?
Molly asks.
I'm not feeling well.
What's wrong? I ask her, sliding her a glass of water.
Tired. My stomach is acting up, she says. I'm sorry, sweetheart, I say. You want ginger ale? Yeah, she says. I ordered some at the bar. He's bringing it over. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry, I tell her.
We can still paint, she says. I asked the front desk. They've got a small reception hall for weddings and events. They'll have it in there.
If you're not up to it, we can just hang, Molly says.
I'm up to it.
When the waiter comes, she orders plain white toast. Molly, Julie, and I get sandwiches. May takes the tiniest sip of her ginger ale. She pats at her temples. She's sweating.
Don't worry, she insists. I'm fine. Let's talk about something else.
How about this weather? Molly says.
Not that.
Talk fashion to us, Mabes. Give us the scoop.
Oh, she says, looking alive again. Okay.
She tells us about celebrities she's worked with, who's nice or mean. She tells us about colors and cuts and designers.
Are capri pants ever coming back? I hope not, Julie says. I hate my ankles.
I think about what Tristan said, about Julie not being Julie. I watch her closely, waiting for some evidence, an unfamiliar mannerism, a new tic. But she moves the way she's always moved. She smiles the same. One side of her mouth goes before the other. It's Julie. It's my best friend. I can't deny her. Maybe part of me wanted to so I could step out of my life and into the one she built. I'm jealous of that life. I'm jealous of her. I always have been. And I'm jealous of May, her passion, her career, her apartment. The cute plants she has in hanging terrariums that she can keep alive and thriving while all my plants shrivel and die within days. I'm jealous of Molly and her zero fucks given, of her stress-free existence out in Los Angeles, of how she knows the place, how she speaks about the streets and the neighborhoods, maps out this other world with a lightness in her voice that can be only love. I wonder what it's like to love where you live, to wake up in the morning and feel lucky to be there. It's shameful to admit this jealousy. You're not supposed to be jealous of your friends. I do think 3/4-length sleeves will come back in a big way, May says. And she grabs the table with one hand and puts the other over her mouth. Mabes? She reaches for her napkin and vomits into it.
Oh, God,
she says. I hand her another napkin. Here.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, Molly says, tapping Julie's shoulder.
They slide out of the booth.
The smell will make me... Molly retches.
No, no, no,
May hums to herself. Here, I say. We'll get you cleaned up.
Don't cry, honey.
Shh. Julie tosses me another napkin. I wipe May's chin and leave the soaked wad on the table. Some leaked down onto her shirt. There's some in her hair.
We'll go up to your room, I say. Get you showered and changed.
Okay,
she whimpers. Can you guys have them send more toast and ginger ale to May's room?
Sure, Julie says.
Yeah,
Molly says.
Sorry, I can't deal with that.
I've got it, I say. Come on, Mabes. I put my arm around her waist, and she leans on me. I try to ignore the smell, breathe through my mouth.
I don't know what's wrong with me,
she says. Could have eaten something bad. Could be a stomach bug.
I can't be sick, she says. What else could go wrong?
Not a thing, I tell her. The staircase is Everest. May can barely support her own weight. She's not heavy. It's just awkward dragging an extra set of limbs up the stairs.
I'm so sorry,
she says. Don't apologize for being sick.
I'm sorry.
One more time and I'll drop you.
Please don't.
You know I'd never. She hands me the key and I open the door to her room. I forgot how comically pink it is.
I'm going to shower, she says. You don't have to stay.
I'm staying.
The remote is on the table if you want to watch TV. I've also got some magazines in my suitcase.
Don't worry about me. Do you need anything? She shakes her head.
I'll feel better after I shower.
She closes the door to the bathroom, turns the fan on. I can still hear her getting sick. She flushes the toilet twice. The shower comes on. She probably hates that I'm here. May doesn't like people to see her sick. She likes to quarantine herself until she's better, to give the illusion she's immune. It's all about appearances with that one. I put something on TV, turn the volume up to give her some semblance of privacy. I like this room. It's much smaller than mine. It feels safer. I appreciate how girly it is. Maybe it's meant to be romantic, all the hearts and flowers. Valentine's Day in room form. I wouldn't want a man in here. I like it alone, where I can pretend I'm a princess or a movie star, or both. Grace Kelly. It's like I'm inside a Barbie dream house. I never played with Barbies, but I understood their appeal. Every once in a while, when I was a kid, I'd be at Walmart with Lou, and she'd walk me down the toy aisle. She'd tell me I could pick something out, whatever I wanted. I'd look at the Barbies, with their thick, synthetic hair and forever smiles, and think, maybe. I liked their outfits, the variety of options. But I never ended up getting one. Not because they were expensive, and I knew we didn't have a lot of money, though that might have had something to do with it. I never really wanted one. What would I do with it? I couldn't perceive any enjoyment beyond standing in the aisle, looking. I pace around. I check in with my reflection in the heart-shaped mirror. I don't look so good. My hair is sloppy, my eyes puffy and bloodshot. I should be doing something productive, like searching for a medical condition that makes you crave raw meat. It's too hard to think about with the enduring smell of May's puke in the air. There's a knock at the door. I open it, expecting Molly or Julie, but it's Patsy. She's carrying a tray.
Room service,
she says with a big fake smile. She's blinking a lot. Thank you, I say, taking the tray.
I hear your friend is sick. Is she doing okay?
She's fine, showering. Could be a stomach bug. Maybe something she ate. Patsy's smile descends. Then it falls away entirely. Her eyes widen. I turn around to look behind me, assuming she's reacting to some alien swamp monster in my blind spot. What? I ask her.
I'm very sorry she's not feeling well. Please let us know if you need anything.
I don't know who this us is. I feel like Patsy is the only one who works here.
We want our guests to have the best possible experience, she says. For me, this place is home. It's important to me our guests enjoy their time here.
Yeah, I say, hoping she'll leave.
Anyway, will you let us know when she's feeling better?
Sure. Thanks. I let the door shut. It slams. I'm holding the tray, so I couldn't stop it. I'm not sure I feel bad. I set the tray down on the foot of May's bed. They sent up the sandwich I ordered at the table. I eye it suspiciously. There's no way this isn't a food poisoning situation. It hits me like a baseball bat. The crepe. May was the only person to try Julie's crepe. Not to mention, Julie kissed her on the mouth. Tristan said he got sick too. He said he was tired, couldn't keep food down, just like May. What if Julie carries some kind of sickness? What if she has a parasite? Worms? Would that explain the raw meat? If so, wouldn't the doctors have caught it? I take my head in my hands and squeeze. May had only 2 tiny bites of Julie's crepe. It couldn't be that. Not possible. I'm making up stories trying to connect random dots, and for what? Julie has the answers. I just need to suck it up and ask. Have a conversation. I wonder if I'm in denial. If the situation with Julie is more severe than I'm allowing myself to acknowledge or willing to accept. But the last time I questioned whether I was in denial, I wasn't. I was right. Everyone thought Julie was dead, but I knew she wasn't. I knew she would come back, and she's back. She's here. Lightheaded, I peel the bread off my sandwich and peck at the crust. I turn off the TV so I can concentrate, figure out what exactly I should say to Julie and how to get her alone to say it. But with the TV off, I can hear May getting sick again. I can hear her over the shower. I get up and knock on the door. Mabes, you all right? No response. I knock again. Mabes? Another knock. May. May, I'm coming in, okay? I'm going to come in. I count to 5, giving her another chance to answer, then open the door. She's on the floor in the fetal position, her body barely covered with a towel.
Honey,
I drop down on my knees.
May?
She groans. I'm sorry.
What's going on?
I'm so sick, she whispers. Is it just nausea? She shakes her head.
I'm tired. My whole body aches.
Okay, Mabes, I think we're gonna have to get you to a doctor.
No, I'm fine.
You're not fine. It could be something serious.
It's not. Touch of food poisoning, she says.
She tries to sit up and realizes she's exposed. She pulls the towel around herself. I'm going to bring you some water. Let's see if you can keep it down, okay?
Okay.
I get the water Patsy brought up. May sips at it. How's that? She nods. You've got to finish that glass. Take your time, but I need you to finish it.
You're good at this, May says.
Not as good as you. You used to take care of me when I got sloppy drunk.
A few times.
I'd take care of Julie. You'd take care of me. Molly can hold her liquor.
Molly doesn't need to be taken care of, she says between sips and deep breaths.
You didn't get hammered in college, except for the Southern Comfort incident. I catch myself. Which, of course, never happened. She manages a feeble laugh.
I never broke my rule.
Rule?
My maximum.
Oh, right.
The self-imposed two-drink maximum. Class act, you are. She shakes her head.
It was because of Alice.
I forgot about Alice. She was May's best friend when she was growing up. They met on the first day of preschool and became inseparable. Everything they did together. Girl Scouts, ballet class, homework, sleepaway camp, manicures with their allowance money. Their parents bought bunk beds because they slept over at each other's houses so often. They went to the same preppy private schools. At the end of their sophomore year, they went to a party. These rich kids didn't have normal drinking in the basement high school parties. They had parties in their absentee parents' mansions. They drank top shelf liquor out of glassware instead of cheap beer out of solo cups. Alice got wasted. May tried to stop her, tried to drag her home, but Alice was three sheets, and apparently she was a mean drunk. She said something completely, soul-crushingly awful to May, so May left without her. Later that night, Alice stripped naked in the middle of this big party. She walked around naked, danced naked, drank naked, took pictures naked. The pictures went up online, circulated around school. Someone printed them out and taped them to Alice's locker. She was harassed so badly she transferred schools. Her mom had to drive her an hour each way to a private school in another county. May stuck by her in the aftermath. She defended her at school, took the pictures off of her locker, and got in early every day to make sure no one put them back up. May felt guilty that she hadn't been there for Alice that night, that she hadn't tried harder to get her to leave the party. But she was conflicted because Alice said this horrible thing to her, and she couldn't confront her about it. At least, she felt Alice was in too fragile a state to be confronted. Alice claimed to have no recollection of that night. She likely didn't remember what she said, or she did, and a lapsed memory was a convenient excuse. The wound festered. Their friendship was never the same. And since they didn't go to the same school anymore, they saw less and less of each other. They drifted apart. They're not in touch at all anymore. That experience hatched May's two-drink limit. She stuck to it all through college, and to this day, she never gets out of control. I think that's why she takes such good care of us, why she worries so much about our good time, our feelings, why she's so afraid of alienating Julie. She knows what it's like to lose a friend.
That's the last of it, I promise, she says to me as I hold back her hair.
Don't tell me that to get out of seeing a doctor. Tell me the truth.
Tell me the truth. This is practice for what comes next with Julie.
That is the truth, May says. She points to the robe on the back of the door. It's hot pink with red hearts. I hand it to her, turn around so she can change into it. When I lived with Julie, there was no turning around. For someone who was so self-critical about her body, Julie wasn't shy about getting naked, so I wasn't shy either. We saw each other's bodies all the time. It wasn't a big deal. Maybe other people would think it was weird. It wasn't weird to us. I don't think I got a robe in my room, I say.
Did you look in the closet?
I don't think there is a closet.
If there is, I haven't noticed it.
I map out my room in my head. Where could it be? And if it's there, what's inside it?
I'm decent,
May says. She's leaning against the sink for support.
You want to lie down?
She nods. I help her to the bed.
They brought food?
She asks, pointing to the tray. Patsy. I pull back the covers, clear a path between the pillows. I bring over the garbage bin and the water.
I ruined the whole weekend. I should have picked somewhere else. I just thought...
She puts a hand over her mouth. I lift up the garbage bin and offer it to her. She shakes her head.
No, I'm okay.
You didn't ruin this weekend. We love it here, though it doesn't seem to like us much.
We don't get to be together anymore. Not just because of Julie going missing, because we live so far apart. We have separate lives now.
I don't have a life, I tell her.
Yes, you do, Lise. I know it's not exactly what you want, but it's a life. You're healthy.
That's the trump card. I can't complain about my life, my situation, when May has to live with strangers gawking at her, when Molly stared down death as a kid. It's supposed to give me perspective, but there's the nagging inch of me that resents it. My problems aren't invalid, not to me. Just because they aren't life-altering, life-threatening, doesn't mean they don't make me feel bad. I wake up with them every morning, carry them around all day like a lead backpack, and I fall asleep with them at night. They're real, and they're mine. I know I'm lucky, I know that, but it doesn't change how I feel. I guess that makes me a shit person. My shittiness seems to be a recurring theme today.
You're going to figure it out, she tells me. You're smart and strong-willed. Once you put your mind to something, it's on. You go after it. You'll end up where you want to be.
We'll see, I tell her.
It's a struggle for everyone. You know that, don't you?
I know.
Do you?
She asks. She sighs, lets her head fall to the side.
What I'm trying to say is, I struggle too, sometimes. It's hard for me too.
I'm sorry. She raises a hand up.
I don't need you to be sorry. I need you to understand. That's why I started seeing a therapist. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I feel completely untethered. I know you guys make fun of me or think I'm shallow, but my clothes are so important to me. It's how I control how other people see me. They're part of my identity.
Mabes, I say. She never talks like this. I can't tell if it's fever ramblings or if she's trying to open up to me. I push back her bangs to feel her forehead. You're warm.
I've got the chills, she says.
I give her the glass of water, and she takes a series of mini sips.
Maybe I can sleep it off, she says.
You think? There's a knock at the door. This time I look through the peephole. It's Molly and Julie. Hey, guys.
I don't want an audience,
I hear May say behind me, her voice hoarse. I step out into the hall. I leave the door open a crack. If I close it completely, I might lock myself out. How is she? Molly asks. Her eyes are wide and worried. She's fine, I tell her. She'll be fine. What's wrong? I'm not sure, I say. Maybe something she ate.
Great,
Molly says. We need to put on happy faces for May. She's upset about everything.
Is she still barfing?
It's been a few minutes. She's in bed now. I want to say hi, Molly says, and the way she says it, I know she's not asking. I open the door to let her in. I stand out in the hall with Jules. What are you guys up to? I ask her.
We just finished our lunch. We sat for a while, had a drink.
The painting thing starts in a bit, but I don't think Molly wants to do it. Arts and crafts aren't really Molly's thing. Julie laughs.
No, not really.
I look down and notice Julie's arm. The sleeve of her sweatshirt is up, revealing a sequence of scratches on her forearm. They're pink and thick as ribbons. Fresh. She catches me staring. What happened? I ask. She shrugs, goes to pull down her sleeve. I move to stop her, but she takes my wrist in her other hand. It's embarrassing, she says. What is? She slides her hand down, puts her palm in my palm, injects her fingers between mine. Her skin is ice, but I can't pull away. I think she's about to tell me something, something important. But then she giggles.
It's nothing!
I've got two hands on my shoulders. There's a flare of white-hot panic before I realize it's Molly behind me.
Jesus!
Sorry.
You startled me, ninja.
World's first and only one-legged ninja, she says. May's barfing again. I turn around to go in, but Julie stops me.
I'm up, she says. The door shuts.
Molly grabs my arm. You can't leave me alone with her. You went into the room.
Not May, Julie.
What now?
It's awkward, first of all, because I know something's up and she knows that I know. I can tell.
And then she's like eating the meat off her sandwich. She's like picking out pieces of turkey and eating them with her fingers. It's all stuck in her teeth.
And I'm grossed out by it. And so I'm not eating.
And then she asks me if I'm gonna finish mine. I tell her no. And then she eats the meat off my sandwich. What the fucking fuck? Maybe she's paleo.
Molly puts a hand on her hip. I appreciate the joke, but also, fuck you. I'm being serious.
I told you I'll talk to her.
When?
Later, tonight, I tell her. May might need to see a doctor.
I'll take her, she says. Give you a chance to be alone with Julie. I'm telling you, you should have seen the way she was eating.
She tripped a wire. Why is she so repulsed by her? We don't know what she's been through. Don't you have any compassion?
It's a gut punch of a question. Molly's body takes it like one. She teeters back, then slumps forward. Her face expands with shock. I wait for her to say something back, something mean and ruthless, or something to make me feel guilty. But she doesn't get a chance to say anything. The door swings open.
Are you guys just gonna stand out in the hallway or what?
Julie asks, poking me. I look back at Molly.
After you, she says.
I turn around and suddenly I'm so dizzy, I need to lean against the doorframe to stop myself from falling. It smells like pencil shavings.
Wow, I say, taking a deep breath. I almost just passed out.
What's wrong? Julie asks. Not you too.
No, not my stomach.
I stagger into the room and sit down on the love seat. Molly stands in the corner with her arms crossed. She's probably pissed at me. I don't know if I care, even though it was too harsh, what I said to her. She's only saying what we're all thinking, and she's saying it because May and I aren't. If both of them were acting like nothing was wrong, I'd be up in arms.
You okay?
Molly asks, her voice flat.
I'm fine. Dizzy spell.
She hands me the plate with my picked-over sandwich on it, without making eye contact, without really acknowledging me at all. Remembering the food here is potentially poisonous, I gnaw on the pickle, safe out of the jar.
Thanks, I say to Molly. She won't look at me. We should get May to a doctor.
May is still and doll-like. Her eyes peel open at the mention of her name. The covers slither around her. Her hands are so delicate and so white, they look like bones.
No,
May says, and weakly takes another sip of water.
Give me a few hours and I'll bounce back. I'm good, I promise. You should go to the wine and painting.
I'm not going to that,
Molly says.
Come on,
May says. Please, that would make me feel better.
We'll stay here with you, Julie says.
May shakes her head.
I love y'all, but I should be alone. This isn't pretty.
We got a y'all, I say, clapping.
Julie and Molly join in.
A y'all,
Molly repeats. In a hillbilly accent, she adds,
a real genuine y'all.
My defenses are down,
May mumbles.
Yeah, we're not going anywhere,
I say, moving to the foot of her bed. She takes a deep breath and lifts a hand to her head.
Oh,
you can't be alone, I tell her. She's crying now.
Aw, Mabes,
Julie sits next to me. She's so light, the mattress doesn't sink under her weight.
If you don't want us here, we'll leave. This weekend is a disaster, she says. I wanted us all to be together.
We are, Molly says.
Not like this.
Her sobs yank her chest in, spit it back out. She's convulsing.
May, please, calm down. You're going to make yourself sicker, I tell her, putting a hand over her chest.
Don't take advantage of the poor girl, Molly says. This gets me and Julie, but not May. She's still beside herself. Or something. She's got a funny look on her face.
Shh, she says. Do you hear that?
The four of us go still as statues. There's a screaming, distant, obscure, but there. It's more of a wail, a howl, pure agony.
What is that?
Molly asks, her eyebrows pinching together. She's scared. Suddenly, the room gets smaller. It bears down on us. The door begins to clatter, rebel against its frame. The walls shake, the chandelier.
You're seeing this?
Molly asks, slipping behind me, her new human shield. The lights flicker, submerging us in moments of total darkness. They come back on long enough for us to see Julie step toward the door.
No, Molly says, don't open it.
Julie doesn't listen. She's at the door, hand on the knob. Even now, after everything she's been through, she can't help herself. She and I are the same way. You could tell us, don't touch the stove, it's hot. But we'd have to see for ourselves. We'd need our palms burned to believe. The door slams shut, sending a cold whoosh of air toward me. The lights are back, but the sound doesn't cease.
What the hell is happening? Molly asks.
May lets another sob escape, but then she quiets, her lips puckered like a bad hem.
There's no one out there,
Julie says, coming back inside a second later. She covers her mouth to hide a yawn.
It's just the wind. The wind? No way, Molly says. There's no fucking way.
It sounds like that sometimes. When it gets really intense, it's like that up in Maine. There's no window in May's room to look out of. We can't witness the brutality of the weather. Julie grabs the remote and turns on the TV. She flips to the weather channel.
Weather advisory, she says. See?
A dark, menacing shape hovers over the northeast. It's darkest over New York, above us. It begins to travel up the coast, eventually disappearing around Nova Scotia. We're warned of rain, hail, winds up to 60 miles per hour.
Power line might have gone down or something, Julie says, kicking off her shoes. It's October,
May cries. I've never seen her like this.
Shh, Mabes, shh, it's okay. We're all happy to be here. We're having a good time. We can hang out in here.
Play cards like old ladies, I tell her. I've got a deck back in my room. I'll go get it, yeah? You up to it? She nods.
Okay, I'll be right back.
I'll go with you, Julie says. I'm relieved I'm not going alone. There's a wicked voice in the back of my head telling me that it wasn't the wind, that Julie was wrong and that whatever was screaming, or whatever caused the screaming, is still out in the hall. Didn't sound like the wind to me. I catch Molly's gaze and remember what being alone with Julie means, what I need to do. The anxiety spreads, quick and belligerent as a rash.
All right, after you.
I feel like such a lady, Julie says, curtsying.
You are a lady.
As soon as the door closes, Julie grabs me.
Ah!
She laughs.
Oh my God, you're so jumpy.
You grab me.
Not hard, she says. Don't tell me you too.
What?
Molly is afraid of me.
What do you mean?
Don't act like you haven't noticed, she says.
It's an invitation to have the talk. I should do it now. But her eyes are big and pretty and shining with mischief, and I love it when they get this way. I forgot how much I love being special to Julie, how good it feels to be on her team. She wouldn't talk to May about this, not Molly either, obviously. just me.
I mean, I'm used to people being weird toward me, but come on.
Am I being weird? I ask her.
No more than usual, she says. You and May are fine, but Molly can barely look at me. And when she does, it's like I'm disgusting to her.
Really?
Yep.
Are you going to talk to her about it? I ask.
I can't get my door open. I get that this key is supposed to be charming, but I miss key cards. Boop, that's it.
It's intensely cold in my room. I check the thermostat. It's at 50.
Great. The thermostat is officially busted.
Look at it. It's a piece of shit. It's older than the hotel. I'm going to have to call Patsy.
Let me see. Julie steps up to it. She turns the dial. Why was it at 50?
No idea. It's been doing that the whole time I've been here.
Going to 50?
No, moving on its own.
For sure a ghost, she says.
Sorry, you were talking about malls?
I don't have anything to add. I kind of expected her to be like this. May, I thought, would overcompensate, which she is, but like, she always does, don't you think?
Agree.
You're you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, she says. Hey, can I borrow your phone charger?
Mine isn't working.
It's definitely because it's terrible and stupid, and not because I keep tripping over it and ripping it out of the socket.
Sure. I unplug my charger and hand it to her.
You're a dream, she says.
I find the cards in my bag.
What do you want to play? I ask her. Uno. Crazy eights? Jenga.
Oh, I get it.
Monopoly. Jules. But I get to be the shoe.
You can be whatever you want to be.
I'm inspired.
Should I call Patsy about the thermostat?
I was going to go downstairs to my room real quick to plug my phone in. I'll stop by the front desk.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks, Julesy.
For you, anything.